Good to see everybody. We have children in here who have classes. So if you would like to go to your class and you're a child, this would be a great moment for that. Welcome, everyone. We're going to be starting. We just finished up the series on the Sermon on the Mount that was the recipe for happiness, and that took us quite a while. I'm trying something a little bit different than I normally do because I'm going to have a theme, and I'm planning on doing this for 5 weeks, so we'll see. This is not what I normally do. Normally, I take a passage, and I take themes that come out of that passage. I'm still going to do that because that's just what I do. But my goal is to find, I'm going to be talking about some things. And the series is going to be called Why Church? Because I do think that this is an important thing for us to think about. You probably noticed we've been doing a few little changes and a few things. Just kind of trying to tweak things a little bit to make them a little bit better. And, you know, some of them may be better and some of them may not, and we may rechange it to what we had before. I don't know what we're going to do. But we're just asking God to show us, and we're going to take a step at a time. And one of the things about this, kind of a little incident that I wanted to share with you to start, is a couple weeks ago, when I wasn't here, the 1 week I was in Oregon, the other week I was traveling up to my family's residence. When we left here on that Sunday morning when we were traveling at about 5 o'clock in the morning. And we got to the other side of L.A., and it was, I don't know, 7:30 or 8, something like that. And we stopped, got a cup of coffee, sitting there, kind of updating things on our little devices, as can happen at one of those type of places. And then we got back in the car. We start talking, and Meredith and I are like, man, you know, like the week before we had been in Oregon and we went to church with Michael and my son and his family up there. And so it's kind of really weird for us to just not be in church. And really it's weird not to be in here and part of the chapel. And this is like my family, my home. This is what I do. So then we were saying, well, let's look for a church that we could stop at along the way. And so Mary Lynn gets my phone and she's over there. And we found out a couple things about that I felt really good about the chapel about. One was our website has on the top what time is it and how to get there, which if you're driving down the freeway trying to figure out where you're going to stop is pretty handy. And so we finally found a place that worked out with our drive and everything. It was in Goleta. And then we were in Goleta at the Goleta Valley Church or something like that. I'm not sure the name. But it was kind of like the chapel in Goleta. It was just like being here, only there, and it was very similar, and it was a lot of things about it that were like, oh, it's kind of interesting coming in here with a different set of eyes and seeing it not as from the inside, but seeing it from the outside, which is something I just can't do here because I'm definitely on the inside and I don't see from the outside. But there were a few things that we learned, and we were like, wow, this is really kind of interesting. And they were doing a lot of things that I think they were really trying, and they were doing a really good job in so many ways. But there were a few things that was like, okay, here, you great heart. And one of the things I felt like God's been speaking to me about is, you know what, trying is great. And I think everything you do in life starts with a desire to try it. But then as you try it, some things you try from a perfect, great, beautiful motive work, and some things you try from the same beautiful, great motive don't really work that well. And so what we need to do is figure out, well, how can we do what we do and do it well? And always look to how can we do it a little bit better. Anyhow, I was thinking about, one of the ways I was thinking about this is, let's see, how's this going to go? Okay, a few years ago, I was in college. I graduated in 78, so it's been a few years, okay? And when Mary Lynn and I got married, we were going to Cal Poly at the time, and we decided that our family's first investment we were going to make was in a typewriter that looked very similar to that one right there. it was the same basic typewriter, but ours was a Sears brand, but it was the same typewriter made by Smith and Corona. If you're like of my generation, you know what this is. And this was like a high-tech typewriter because it had like these carbon cartridges that you could put in and out. And they put the type went onto the page in such a way, it wasn't ink. It was some kind of like a carbon paper type thing on a ribbon. And then what you could do is you could take the cartridge out and put one in there that was basically like scotch tape, and you could backspace and hit over the previous letter, and it would pull it off the page. And this was like a marvel. Like, I was like amazed, and this was so great. And anyhow, so as I was thinking about the why church, I liked that whole concept, and I was thinking, you know, like, okay, we start at some place, but then we try to kind of improve it. And I've always thought of writing like my senior papers. Mary Lynn had a class that she had a 10-page paper due every Friday through the semester or quarter or whatever it was. It was a business plan class, and she had to develop a business plan that was going to take for a specific company, and she had one each week due on Friday. It was 10 pages typed, submitted, and it was on that Smith Corona typewriter. So that was brutal. And so now what they do instead, they just require 15 or 20 pages because it's so much easier to type it up. But anyhow, so as I was thinking about that, I did the, we have sound here, please. I have sound on this. Let's go back. I've got to have the sound on this. I'm sorry, guys. This was, I didn't give Scott enough of a head. Here we go. Okay, that's what those sounded like. So for all of you, if you know, you're like, below about 40, that's what a typewriter was. And it's a historical document just to kind of keep you on board. But see, I think a lot of times at church, we think that the thing that matters is the historical document. We've always had typewriters, so no way can we switch to, you know, like, it's kind of like that same type of thing. Like, part of it is like, well, what was important in the 10-page paper per week class? Was it that they were giving you typing exercises and you had to just crank that out? And so once you can get a word processor or a computer with a built-in word processor or this, well, then, no, we do this with a typewriter. Well, wait a second, why don't we do it with charcoal on the back of a rock? You know, like we need to, like, at what point does this change? And I did think in the same way, when we kind of look at church, there's certain elements of church that are crucial, that there's no way we change anything on it. And then there's certain elements of, well, why do you do that? I remember when one of the things I changed when I was a missionary in Spain, we had a change in the service times. I took over, another missionary had started the church, and it had 11 o'clock Sunday morning was the main service. And then we also had an evening service, like 6 or 7. I forget what time it was, but it was the evening service. And so then because it was in Rota, Spain, it was right near the military base. And there was we had some people who were kind of, you know, what they'd say, like mixed nationality families. So a lot of them, they would tend to be Spanish woman married to American man. In Rota, there's been an American military base there for about 50, 60 years now. So that's what they said. Everybody has an American brother-in-law because they've gone there, young guys, and they meet the young gals from Rota, and they end up getting married. A lot of them live in, I have a friend on Facebook that she was there in our church at that time. She's married to an American. She lives in Minnesota now. And a lot of people, you go, oh yeah, my sister lives in Kansas or Nebraska or wherever, and they met their husband when he was stationed at Naval Station Rota. So anyhow, so we had people who would come in the morning. Then we had people who would come in the evening. But most of the American families that had American influence in their families, they came on the morning. But then the visitors who were Spanish tended to come in the evening. So it was a small group. Probably in the morning we'd have maybe 40 people. And in the evening, we'd have about 15 or 20. And then the evening is when the visitors always came because, and part of the reason was a cultural thing. Well, why did they come in the evening? Well, for most Spaniards, 6, 7 o'clock in the evening, that's the afternoon. They eat dinner in the summer, especially they eat dinner around midnight. They eat dinner during the winter, they eat dinner at 10 o'clock. In the summer, they push it up to like midnight. So, and then if you eat dinner at midnight, you don't go to bed till 3 on an early to bed night. And so then 11 in the morning is tough to get there. But all the Americans with American influence who were used to living over here, they came in, you know, they go to bed, they eat dinner at 6 or 7, go to bed at 10 or 11 or 12 or something like that. But then 11 o'clock in the morning is perfect. Well, where did 11 o'clock in the morning come from? A lot of that came, like I started studying, like, well, why do we meet at that time? Well, we did that because people in America used to live on farms. If you look, if you talk to anybody that's my age, their grandparents lived on a farm. Almost all, because about 90% of the population lived on farms 100 years ago. So then what happened is you had to take care of farm chores in the morning, and you had farm chores in the afternoon. So mid-morning would give you time to get out, milk your cows, feed them, take care of these other animals, get cleaned up, load up, get to church, have church, eat, go back, get ready, do your afternoon chores. So it worked really well. Well, the thing is, when I was in Spain, and even today here in La Mesa, not that many of us live on farms. And not that many of us have farm chores. And not that many of us have to do those things. And in Spain, their thing was, like, I would go visiting, literally. You would go take a walk after dinner. It's midnight. It's 1 a.m. You're walking down through the walking street in town. It'd be like being in downtown La Mesa. The streets are so packed with people you can't walk through. And they're pushing baby buggies. It's 1 a.m. Okay. So, therefore, I said, hey, guys, let's do a little change here. We need to kind of tweak a few of our things. And, you know, I've kind of like tried to be, keep it on the, let's stay calm here. And let's understate everything. So I go, hey, we're going to need to make a little change. Okay, what do you think it is, John? Okay, we're going to drop the morning service. We're just going to get rid of it. We're not going to do that anymore. Some people, it was like, whoa, why? Well, then I said, look, whenever we have a visitor come, and our goal is to reach Spanish people, whenever we have a visitor come, they come to the evening service, and there's like 15 people here, and it's like really awkward and kind of small, and we have a really nice group in the morning. Let's all just come in the evening. And then we go, okay, well, I said, but you know what we need? What would be really good is a men's discipleship group. So I've been praying about that. So why don't we start that? And I know you guys are all free at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning because we just freed that up. So we'll meet at 11 a.m. for a men's discipleship group. And you know what? And at first people were a little bit like, oh, I don't know, you know. But then after about 2 weeks, the women loved it. All the guys out of the house for a couple hours in the morning, they could get their stuff ready. Be ready that everybody comes, and it worked out great, and the church grew, and it was like, well, why are we doing that? Why am I not using that old Sears and Roebuck knockoff Smith Corona electric typewriter that I was so proud of in 1977? There's better ways to do it. And so part of what we want to do is examine, like, what are key elements of our church? What are we trying to actually accomplish? And what do we need to accomplish? What does God call us to do? And then what do we need to do to adjust? I think we're doing a lot of things really well, and I'm totally blessed. And I'm blessed by you guys every day. I felt like this whole past few weeks after my dad died, and I don't want to keep just referencing that, but the thing I really was blessed by was just how everybody was just loving on me and making me feel appreciated and loved. And that's like a huge thing. that's really kind of one of the themes that we're going to talk about today. So let's kind of move ahead here. Look, we're going to talk about why church. But see, now that's not what we're talking about. That's what we're talking about. The other one, the first one, that's a place. Is this going to go? There we go. That's where the church meets. This other one is really, that's the church, is the people. Like, we're all the church. Now, this is a great place, and we're thankful for it. And a bunch of people mentioned to me today when they're coming in, wow, it's really nice there's air conditioning in here, because if we were meeting out in the sun and we were all sitting, we would have a significantly shorter service because we'd have to deal with the fainting and all that. So this is really nice having a room that has, it out of the sun, got some shade, cool air. It's very comfortable chairs. We can sit. It's all really good. But that's not the church. That's a nice tool that the church has. That's a place for us to be blessed. But the church is us. One of the things I was thinking about when I about the church, one line in here about the church is, this is something that Jesus says is his church. The church is a group of people. It's an assembly. That's what literally the word means. They used it for assembly, like in when there was a governmental assembly, or when they had the, it doesn't necessarily mean a group of people assembled to worship God. It means a group of people assembled. That's what a church is. And Jesus came, and when Jesus was in Caesarea Philippi, which I didn't put a map in here, sorry guys, but it is in the north, and I do have some pictures. Now, when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, that's where this is. This is Caesarea Philippi. It's in the northern part of Israel. It's right at the very way up at the north. These are the headwaters that feed into the Sea of Galilee. And this was in the area of the tribe of Dan. And Dan, and the word Jordan means out of or down from Dan. Jor means out of or down from, and Dan means the tribe of Dan. So that area was there. So these are the headwaters. And this place right here, this place was Caesarea Philippi. And there were it was a religious center. And because it had this spring coming out and this water flowing, it was a place where people gathered. And I'll kind of zoom in here a little bit. One of the things that they had there, if you can see those little, I don't know how well you can see them, you can kind of see them. And see, there's these little niches all around through there. In there, they had like idols and little gods that they would put in those little carve-out places. And so this was a center of non-Jewish worship, let's put it that way, at the time of Christ. This was a center of paganism. It was a center of people who had other gods. And Jesus, as he's there... And then one more thing. See that big cave there? That was called, that had the name, the gates of hell or the gates of Hades, to gates to the dead. And so if you kind of keep that in mind, let's kind of look. Jesus, imagine he's standing at this place and he's saying these words. Now when Jesus came into the district of Caesarea Philippi, he asked his disciple, who do people say that the Son of Man is? They said, some say John the Baptist, others say Elijah, others Jeremiah or one of the prophets. And he said to them, but who do you say that I am? And Simon Peter replied, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. And Jesus answered him, blessed are you, Simon, son of Jonah or Bar-Jonah, for flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father who is in heaven. And I tell you, you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. I just think it's interesting that in this place where he is, that's a place of paganism, a place of pagan worship, it's a place where there's this cave called the gates of hell. It's a place where people come to worship other gods. Jesus is there with his disciples, and he says, look, I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. Now, one of the things that is sometimes pointed out, which I'll go ahead and make that right now one of those times, is that the gates are a defensive thing. The gates are for defense. You don't usually I mean, I guess somebody could be running by and you swing and hit them with the gate and boom, that would make it offensive, you know. But generally speaking, you have gates for protection, right? You let people in, you close the gate so people can't get in. And so the thing that would keep a gate from prevailing against you is you attack the gate, you take the gate and you tear the gate down or break it or open it or do what you have to do. So Jesus is saying, look, he will build his church, I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. So the blockages and gates that keep us from reaching out, that's not going to prevail against the church. That's not going to prevail. The church is going to overcome that. And so that's kind of where he's going with that. And so what I want to do is talk about a few different things. Here, let's go to this. Jesus went to the cross. We're going to skip out a lot because from Matthew 16 to Acts 2, there's a lot of stuff happened. And we're going to just kind of summarize. Jesus went to the cross. He was buried. He rose again. He filled the disciples and the other believers with the Holy Spirit. They preached the gospel. Thousands of people were saved. And now we pick up the story. And what are they doing, all these disciples, that this church that's all of a sudden this big assembly that didn't exist before? Now, what are they doing? And I think that we can learn from this. I don't know that this is everything exactly what you have to do. If they were using Selectric typewriters, that doesn't mean we have to use them. But I think the principles are here of what we're shooting for. And they devoted themselves, the disciples, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship, to the breaking of bread and the prayers. And awe came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common, and they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. So the church was there, it was functioning, and people were being added to it. And people were like amazed at what was going on. Now, as I was kind of trying to like limit myself to a few, to some themes, and what are some basic areas of that the church needs? Why church? Why do we have this, and what are we trying to accomplish? So here's five basic things, and these are going to be our 5 weeks that we're going to talk about this. At least that's the current plan, but I've been known to change plans. So let's just go with that. And this will give you a chance, maybe one of the 4 or 5 album covers that, Michael is used to like albums, so he wants to have album art. So as you draw your picture, something may make it. So that'll be cool. So anyhow, here they are. Worship is one of our functions. We worship God. We have fellowship. We do ministry together. We do evangelism together. And here we go. One more. There we go. And discipleship is training. Now, I thought we could just try to like spin the wheel and kind of see what comes up for today. Oh, wow. There it goes. Yeah, amazingly, it came up on fellowship. And I have a whole message prepared on that. That's really cool. So anyhow, we have, let's kind of talk about fellowship, because I think this is really one of the key elements of the church. And part of the thing about this to me is I have a bit of a problem in the sense that I'm more of a uniter than a separator. So I kind of tend to look at, well, the whole thing, and it's hard for me to say, well, look, a pie piece of fellowship and discipleship is right next to that, and evangelism and ministry and worship, but really they're all kind of intermingled. I don't know if this is the best illustration that made it for what I'm going to do, but I believe that fellowship occurs when we share our lives. That's what they were doing in Acts 2, right? But then how do we share our lives? Well, maybe we're doing some ministry together. Maybe, you know, maybe next Saturday you're here for the work day and you're sitting cleaning something up or trimming some bushes or painting or something, and you're with someone who you maybe don't hang out with them every single day, but you are not only doing ministry together, you're having fellowship together. You're making friends. The thing I've always noticed is all these things go together. You have Kevin, when he gave his little talk, his testimony when he left, Kevin came up to me many years ago and said, "Hey, John, will you disciple me?" Or mentor me, I think was the word they used. But it's kind of the same idea. So Kevin was like right out of college right then. He had just graduated. And that's a month or so after he graduated from college, we started meeting. And then we had like a little Bible program. So it was kind of like, let's meet and let's start this discipleship. But you know what? Discipleship turns into fellowship. Because after a while, yeah, I've taught Kevin and I've shared with him a bunch of stuff. But then pretty soon he starts sharing his life with me. And so then pretty soon I'm learning from him. And we're learning from each other. And this is something I think has to happen in our lives, is to understand, look, then we get an idea. Hey, Kevin had this great idea. Let's go over and be part of the concerts in the park at the Harry Griffin Park in the summer. And so, okay, what are we going to do? So he went down, talked to everybody, lined the whole thing up, and he did it. And then we went and got a popcorn machine. And for a couple of years, we went over there and passed out popcorn. And then Kevin still had a burden for that, because even up to last year, he went over there and helped with the setup and did everything pretty much every week. So part of it's like we start off with maybe discipleship, but then that turns into fellowship, and then we do ministry, and that turns into this. And then we have a goal of reaching people, and that's called evangelism, and we do it together. So we're doing this ministry of evangelism, and through the process, we're having fellowship, and we're doing it all to the glory of God. So that's worship. So things aren't really as, you know, we're going to talk about fellowship today, but just so you get the idea that, look, all these things are interrelated. You don't go, oh, well, we'll do fellowship. Or if we think that fellowship is, you know, a lot of times they say, well, we're having a fellowship. So that means after church, there'll be cookies and lemonade and we'll sit around and talk. That's cool. That's a part of fellowship. But we don't want to limit ourselves, because when we're interacting and sharing our lives together, that's what fellowship is. And that can happen all kinds of ways. So we want to look at, like, not, you know, I'm going to write a paper. Well, I have to have a Smith & Corona 1997 model with the cartridge that comes in and out. No, that's not what we're talking about. We need to get the ideas expressed. That's what we're trying to do. That was a tool that was pretty functional. It works. It still works. But there might be something we could improve on. So anyhow, that's part of what I was thinking on this is this. So let's look at this. In light of this, I want to go back over the text I just read in Acts 2. And they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching. This is discipleship, right? The apostles are teaching. Jesus told them, go and make disciples. And the fellowship, you know, the fellowship or the assembly, the group, and to the breaking of bread, which is eating together, which is definitely part of fellowship. We eat together, we share our lives, we share food, we share, like, one of the most basic elements of our life is we have to eat, and we share that food. And it's like, as we eat the same food, or we eat the same, that we share meals and we share. This also is part of us developing and growing and becoming who God wants us to be. And the breaking of bread and prayers, and awe came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. So, you know, there's worship through awe and prayer. They're doing ministry. They're helping people. They're doing, there's these signs and wonders are going on. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. This is another way of putting fellowship, or it's the idea of sharing. They made it. It doesn't seem as though this was like this isn't necessarily what happened here isn't necessarily normative. It's not like, oh, now you have no right to your own property. No, this is, they gave freely. They gave from their heart what they wanted, and they shared, and they made things available for others. And I had somebody come to church the other day, come here, and they wanted some help with something. And I'm like, well, do you have a fellowship that you attend? Well, kind of, you know. And I go, because part of what happens is as we are part of a fellowship, as we are part of fellowship, as we have this community, which is the word we get communion out of, then what we do is we share with each other, we care about each other. And it's just a natural thing that people you know, you share, you understand, you love, it makes it way easier to share. In fact, one of the things that I wanted to mention just as an opportunity for this, Mike was talking about the work day next Saturday, and I have made reference to it as well. I recognize that. But one of the things that's happening is that's really a blessing to us as a fellowship is Mike and Samantha have been able to get a new job. And a new job is apartment manager. And that starts October 1st. And our work day happens to be October 1st. And so they have, like, things at their house that need to go to the new apartments where they're going to be managing. And they're planning on doing that on October 1st as well. Now, Mike was planning, like, I'm going to be here for the work day. In the afternoon, I'll get moving done. I was like, look, you know what? This is all part of our fellowship. This is part of a community. This is how we help. So he's going to need, just you run this through your mind and pray about what part you have in the work day. But maybe part of it, he said he needs about 5 or 6 people with somebody that can drive a car, because Samantha has another job that she's going to be working on that morning. So he needs another driver, and he needs 4 or 5 guys or 6 guys, something like that, maybe like another car load that could help him move the actual things. They don't have a big, huge place, but they do need stuff moved, and they do need that. And that's part of our fellowship, part of our community, part of us sharing our lives with each other. And look, I know a lot of people in here that if you've moved, you've had help moving. And this is like this. I always like these kind of projects because they make a thing where we can just see our fellowship and appreciate each other. And it's an actual practical need that we do. So is it service or is it ministry or is it, it's sharing, it's fellowship, which it's also those other things too. I'm doing it for the Lord. That means it's worship. What are you doing? Like, this all goes together, but there's a great opportunity. So if you would like to partake of that opportunity, talk to Mike after the service, and he's going to be moving his family, which consists of 2 people at this point. And all were together and had all things in common, and they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts. So they got together day by day in a big assembly like this, but then they went to each other's homes and they met in homes as well. So, you know, there's a place in our life where it's great to get together, sing, worship together. And then we have places where we need to get together in the little small groups. If you're in a Bible study, be there, man. You make a difference. Be part of the fellowship. That's all part of the growth. And why do we need this? Because that's going to help you grow in your life. And as we have fellowship, that's going to happen. And then what happened? Because of what the Jesus said, they'll know you're my disciples by the love you have one for another. And so as we're part of the group, and as we love each other, and as we people see this, then God starts showing, yeah, they really are Christian. And the result of this, of them praising God and having favor with all the people, is that the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. And God used that to reach other people. And I think he talked a little bit about the parking lot thing coming up, the parking lot sale. We were here one night at a prayer meeting. And we were walking, and we did like a walking prayer meeting. We decided to do a little bit differently. So we walked around the property praying. And I remember Sammy and Alex and I walked out the back side of that building over there. And we were praying for that back area. And you could see in the apartments, because it was evening, and you could see lights on. Alex thought I was having like some kind of a spiritual experience because I started praying, hey, I pray for that guy who's sitting in front of his TV over there. And then he thought, wow, you know. And then actually, if you look there, you could see a guy sitting in front of his TV over there. It wasn't like I was just, you know, had a vision of anything. It was just like, see that guy right over there sitting, let's pray for him. And we started praying. And then we were saying, you know, well, Lord, how can we reach our community? How can we let people over at the apartments know that we care about them and we love them? And how can we do this in a way that we would be something that we could tangibly do? And then Sammy goes, well, you know, most of the time at apartments, they don't let you have garage sales. So what if we had a parking lot sale and just opened up our parking lot and let people use it and say, hey, so I go, hey, that's a great idea. So then we made up some little flyers, and I went over there to the apartments next door, and I know the manager from when we were dealing with the bees. Like, you never know how every, like, life is a network that all fits together, right? So a couple months ago, Michael and I were attacking the bees up here, and we thought we had them. Notice I said past tense thought. Anyhow, we thought that we had eradicated the bees, but one of the ways we thought that is, I got a phone call and over in the office. And I go, hi. And then it's like, yeah, this is John. I'm the pastor. Oh, well, I wouldn't know. And the woman's name is Kimberly, and she's the apartment manager over there. And I go, she goes, hey, you know, are you the pastor? Yes. Oh, well, who did your bees? And we had a professional come out the first day, so I kind of pointed them. But then Michael and I did all the follow-up once we saw what was going on. So then we followed up, and then she goes, well, I go, well, so-and-so. And she goes, I go, well, why? She goes, well, because they all just came over to our house. So we went over there. So then she said, I go, well, let me talk to my bee guys, and we'll see what we can do. So Michael and I walked over there, and sure enough, on the ground, the bees were confused because we'd blocked off their house. And so there was a pile of bees about the size of this podium that was like this. And it was like a big, huge pile of bees. And the problem was that there was up above there at about, you know, like on the first or second floor, I'm not sure, but it was too high to reach, and we had to use a ladder. There was a vent from somebody's hood on their range vent. And it had like a little net there, that a little screen, so bees couldn't get in. But somebody had pulled the screen up, so the bees were going up into that apartment. So then Michael and I put on Terry's bee suits that we had here. I put the helmet, you know, we put our bee. So we were like bee busters showing up, you know. And we went over there, and we don't need to go into the details, but let's just say there was a chemical attack. And there were a lot less bees when we were done. And then Michael climbed up on the ladder, and he started like tapping on the wall, you know, beating on the wall. And then the bees would start flying out until finally we waited and waited and waited. And then we wait for 30 seconds and no more bees. And we tried it a couple more times, and pretty soon no more bees. So then we closed the screen down, and we told her, look, we're not 100% sure, but when you first hit it, like swarm of bees out, little smaller swarm, until after a while we didn't get any more bees out. So there could still be a couple up in there, but the majority seemed to be out. And just tell whoever lives there to be careful, because there may be bees in there. But anyhow, so we did that. All that's to say, you don't know where that leads you. So I called up Kimberly. Went over there with Sammy, and we went over and said, hey, you know, hey, Kimberly, do you remember me? Yeah, yeah, you're the bee guy. Yeah, okay. So, hey, you know what? We were thinking that a lot of times in apartments, they don't allow garage sales. She goes, no garage sales here. I go, well, we thought that might be the case. So then, so we were thinking that we wanted to just be a good member of our community, and we wanted to help the people around here as much as we could. Do you think if we opened up our parking lot to have a parking lot sale, and people could bring their junk over that they wanted to sell, and then just have a spot and do that, that would, what do you think about that? Oh, that sounds like a great idea to me. Like, number one, she can't authorize any garage sales there, but she could totally send people over here. And I'm like, yeah, so what if we did that? So we made flyers and gave them. She's like, okay, good, I'll post them around the apartments. and get the information. And then I started thinking, when I know John and Melissa live right down at the next set of apartments on Maya and Water. So I called John. John went down, introduced me to their manager, and I suggested to her, and she said, no garage sales. I go, okay, cool. That's what we thought. So we're offering to have our parking lot on the 15th, if anybody would like to. She goes, oh, well, I'm not allowed to post signs around, like in these apartments. But, she said, it's coming up on the first of the month, and everybody pays their rent. So if you gave me a stack of flyers, I'll put them here on my desk. And I send out an e-blast, and if you send me an email, I'll include it and send it to everybody on the in the apartment. Sweet. So I don't know how many people, I don't know if anybody's going to come and sell things. I don't know if anybody's going to come and buy things. I don't know if anybody's going to do anything. But I do know that there's all kinds of ideas of how we can do things. And part of it comes through, well, how does it happen? Through prayer, through worship, through sharing our lives, and then sharing our what God's given us stewardship over with our community so that we can reach to them and show them the love of Christ. Look, that's why we're here. That's what we do. We, as we develop and develop relationships with each other, God will use that to bring other people to Him through Jesus. And that's kind of like I think getting the idea of like, okay, we go to church every Sunday, and look, there's a couple people here I don't see quite as much, but almost everybody here comes almost every week. And that's cool, and I totally love it. But we need to start asking ourselves, well, that's an important element of it. I agree. To go, well, look, it's just me and God, and that's all I need. You know what's weird about that? When man was perfect, there was one man, he was perfect, his name was Adam, he had never done any sin or done anything wrong in his whole life, and God looked down on him and said, you know what he said? It's not good for man to be alone. And so he sent him a helpmeet, right? And then that's with Eve, and then pretty soon from that, we're all here. And then we want to go back and go, yeah, but I don't need other people. It's just me and God. That's all we need. Nah. No, we need each other. The giant sequoias, if you read about them, they grow in groves and they need each other. There's somehow, maybe it's through the roots, maybe it's to protect each other from the wind. I'm not sure why they do, but they don't grow solo. They only grow in groves. And there can be a small grove with 6 or 7 trees, or there's big groves with hundreds or thousands of trees. So, but they grow together. And we, as Christians, we grow together. We do the best when we're together. We work best when we work with each other. When we, sometimes you're like, well, you know, I don't know. This isn't, you know, somebody did something that I didn't like in a church, so therefore, you know what? Learning how to deal with stuff you don't like is one of the biggest things God can do for you. I was kind of thinking, part of what we do when we come here is we have part of this interaction. But another part of this is that we come here and we get into the Word, and this kind of helps us kind of reset where we need to be. I was kind of thinking along these lines, like, and that's what this little picture is going to be, is there's going to be sound with this, so we're good. But what happens is when we talk about music, they used to use these things. This kind of is of a similar era to my typewriter. You can tell I'm like getting old, like I refer back to these old instruments. I did try to take a picture of a modern tuning device. But the bottom line is this, a tuning fork vibrates at a certain frequency, and then that gives you a standard by which you can tune a musical instrument to it. So you listen to that, it gives you a pitch. Then from there you can start, whether it's a piano or a guitar or some other instrument, you match that. Now you know one pitch. From there you can make incremental changes, and everything goes off that. And in fact, one of the things that an old story I've heard, which I think is probably at least true in theory, And someone told me that it really happened is it was going to have a big concert with a bunch of pianos. And they were all going to play this. They had this big, huge stage covered with, I don't know, 25, 30 pianos. And so what they did is they tuned but all the pianos needed to be tuned. So they tuned the first piano, and the way you do it is you tune it with a tuning fork, every piano, and then they're all tuned the same. And if you take the first piano, tune it, then tune the second piano based on the first piano, then tune the third piano based on the second piano, and then the fourth based on the third, down to the 20th based on the 19th, and then you have them all strike the same chord, it's going to be bad. Because there's a slight, we never quite get it perfect. And so as it goes, when I used to cut wood with my dad, we were building something. So he would take one board, and he would write PAT on it. And that was your pattern board. Then we would just set that and mark all the other boards. And then I remember saying, hey, Dad, why is it that you write PAT on one? He goes, because that's our pattern. And we use that one for every one. Because if we mark one and then mark the second with the third, the thing starts growing on you or shrinking. And it's hard to keep it the same. So by having the same one, they all stay within tolerances. And by maintaining the same thing. So here's where we're going with this. We come here in our big group, like they met at the temple every day. We come together and we focus in on the word, because we all need to kind of come back to what the tuning fork saying. Because we'll kind of get off a little bit on our own. So we need to be part of the fellowship, and we get into the word, so that as our fellowship is, we do have a similar, like we're keeping the rails up on our where we're headed and what's our goals and what are we doing. So anyhow. But the other thing I love is slow motion. So hey, why not combine tuning fork, slow motion? Let's see what we have. Enough tuning fork. So kind of as we get, we kind of tune in on, well, here's what the Bible says, because that's our tuning fork. That's our standard that kind of gets us where we need to be lined up with that. Then from there, let's go with this. We have the Bible. And then a lot of times, it's amazing to me is how we can have different reactions based on the same thing. Have you ever noticed that? Like, you hear something, you go, wow, that was great, and you're really happy. And somebody next to you, they're like, I don't know. They're kind of thinking about it, right? And the next guy, he's like, oh, yay, yay. Maybe a little bit cynical. Then somebody else is like, wait, they're upset about this. And somebody else, they're like, what? And to me, it's interesting how you can have the same thing, but everybody kind of has different angles on it and how they react and how they feel. And sometimes through our fellowship, through our sharing of our lives, all of a sudden we start seeing things the way someone else was seeing it. And we all influence each other. We all change each other. So sometimes after we kind of consider it, we'll all go through some kind of a change. Here we go. There we all changed. Different positions here. Before I was happy, now I'm like, oh no, what are you thinking? You know what? But God uses us to impact and influence each other. Part of what we want to do is we want to come together with the little tuning fork, and that kind of brings us together. Then as we're out in the world and we're out in your little world, each one of us have our own little world where we're at work, we're with family, with interactions with different people. All those also affect us. And so we need to kind of like get back. And so we come here. And part of the reason we did this is, hey, let's get it back into tune. If I see the guitar guys, they they tend to, they have to retune stuff often. The other stringed instruments, some instruments stay a little better. The piano gets off, that's fine. It's real hard to tune, so everybody just goes to that. But it's easy to get the whole thing off. So we need to kind of like, okay, why? What does fellowship do with us? What does communion do with us? What does it do? It changes us. It turns us, it kind of keeps bringing us back. And then our interaction, we help each other, because there was something that maybe I thought was funny that really I should have been angry about. And there was something I thought I got angry about that really I needed to kind of take it, like lighten up a bit, John. And our interaction helps with that. And our interaction of who we are and seeing things from different points of view helps a lot. I mean, just in more of a broader sense, I know that as I've been kind of watching stuff in the news, and I'm sure everybody's seen this and you can't really get away from it, is there's like the different things where police have shot people and different reactions and different sides and different people. And everybody, in a certain sense, has a point, and everybody, in a certain sense, is wrong. And part of it is, when we interact with each other and we listen to each other and we strive for answers together, we can achieve them. And I think on a little level, at a church level, we have, we're a bunch of people that have different, everybody's got a different life experience. But yet, if we are focused on who Christ is and who he wants us to be, all of a sudden we can make, the musical instruments don't play the same thing, but they make harmony together. They make music together. We're all a little bit different. But the question is, well, how can we allow God to work in our lives and mold us into the people so that we do work together, so that we are in harmony, that we are in fellowship? You know, fellowship is kind of the idea of our relation, our being together with a cause and working together and sharing, and brotherhood or sisterhood, or, try to invent a new PC word for myself, siblinghood, that we're all brothers and sisters because we have a special relationship with God, that he says when we trust in Christ, we become a child of God. And that means if we're children of God, if we're all children of God, that means we're brothers and sisters. That creates a siblinghood of believers. And so part of this is, well, what's going on? Every Sunday morning, we have a family reunion right here. And we're really happy about it. And we have communion. We share. And we share through working together, through sharing our lives together. We were sharing at a wedding. Chris Anderson got married the other night, and that's part of sharing our lives together. Maybe it's going to somebody's wedding. Maybe it's being part of their, coming up and sharing with me when my dad dies, and people commending and blessing and encouraging me. That's all part of it. So fellowship. I got a couple of things here just to summarize. We influence each other. We influence. We have an impact on each other's lives as we allow each other to enter into relationships with each other. We influence each other. Somebody said that we kind of are all always balancing the need for privacy with the need for intimacy, the need for I don't really want to talk about this with the need of I need to talk about this. There's and where the boundaries are, that's all part of our growth. That's all part of where we are. And part of that comes through trust and realizing that somebody really does care, that people in our group, in our fellowship, in our church, that we love each other and we care for each other and we want to help each other. Yeah, do we do awkward, silly things and do them wrong sometimes? Absolutely. But as we at least go, hey, look, we want to bless each other because we love each other in Christ, God will bless that. And we have influence on each other. And what you think and what you learn, this turns into the fellowship that turns into discipleship that then turns back into fellowship. It all is a cycle. It all works together. We help each other. That's what fellowship is about. We help, we encourage, we bless. And we need each other. And I think if we don't recognize that we have a need, then what happens is we drift. And then we're wondering, well, it doesn't really seem like it works. But yeah, did I really give it a try? Well, I know that I like to build fires. Like, I like to, like, start fires. But not on buildings or anything like that. Only on burnable, realistic, like, legitimate burning materials. But I like stacking up the wood. I like getting the thing. I like lighting with mesh. I like not using flammable liquids. I want to get it, like, from the match and get the thing, little sticks. And I like doing that whole thing, right? And one of the things I've noticed, and I'm sure you've seen it too, is that if you get a fire going and then you take a piece of charcoal and you move it out of the fire, it goes out. And a lot of times what happens is we have this fire for Christ in our lives, but we kind of need each other to kind of keep it stoked a little bit. We bless each other. We encourage each other. We influence each other. We help each other. And then as we're part of the group, we all are. There's a moment where you need help. There's a moment where I need help. There's a moment when somebody else needs help. We all help each other. We encourage each other. That's called fellowship. That's called communion. That's called a brotherhood, a sisterhood. That's called a siblinghood. That's what we do. And that helps us all grow. And through that process, we want to reach out into our community. The community in this neighborhood, that's great. The community that's at your work. The community that's at your sports, your school, your play, wherever you are, your neighborhood, your family. That's all part of people that we want to influence and we want to show and present to them Jesus Christ. And that's why the church, because we need each other. To me, it starts with that. Now, the church starts with, like, why? To me, one of the big things is we need fellowship. We need each other. And that comes through Jesus. That comes through, first, we trust Christ as our Savior. We recognize that we're a sinner. We recognize that we need Christ. We recognize that. And we recognize we can't save ourselves. So we submit ourselves to Jesus. We say, we ask for His forgiveness. And we accept the offer that He's given us of salvation through faith in what He did on the cross. And then, at that point, we enter into the family, and we're part of that. And we celebrate that occasionally with a process that Jesus began when He, on the day of the last day He was alive, He had His disciples come together, and He broke bread, and He shared a cup, and said, "This bread is my body, which is broken for you. And this cup is my blood that will be shed for you." And He said, when you take this, then what we're doing is we're saying, you know what? Number one, I believe that Jesus died for me. And we're saying, number two, I believe that His blood washes my sins away. And that is the basis for our fellowship. That is the basis for our communion. That is the basis for our community. And so we're going to celebrate that. We're going to, like, as a little, I think Jesus introduced this as an object lesson for us. And we're going to take a minute. I'm going to ask the worship team to come up, and we're going to pray. And then we're going to have communion. And we're going to have this, there's the bread, the unleavened bread. You break it. And remember that Jesus, His body was broken for you. And then dip it in the juice. That's how we do it. And you know what? Remember that His blood was shed for you.